Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
So, good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2798. And tonight we're going to have on, as a guest, our own John Anderson from Louisiana. Now, I have never heard his story before because we're not all scheduled on the same days. So this is a new first for me. And for people out there, it'll be, you know, some to you. It'll be a new first also. But before we get started, okay, I am going to read the NASCA mission, all right? We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different perspectives, okay? Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. And presenting the facts to show child abuse is a pandemic. Okay, it's all over the world. Worldwide problem that affects everyone, and that it does do. Okay, number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, each one of those three are very important. Prevention, intervention, and recovery, okay? And we talk about this on our show a lot of times, about prevention, intervention, and recovery. And if you open up our NASCA website, that's NASCA.org, that's NASCA.org, you will find all kinds of information about prevention, intervention, and recovery, and why each one, especially the prevention and intervention as far as helping society, is important. And there's enough information on there, too, about recovery because, you know, those people that are still trying to recover, maybe they're just getting on their healing journey, they need something to go by. They just simply do. And so we offer all different kinds of things on our website. And if you look at that, you'll see that for yourself. You just scroll down a little bit, and you'll see red lines going across. And in those red lines, there's different all kinds of things that you can open up. Number one is programs. That's programs right in your own town that you might not even know about because they do not have signs outside that say recovery groups or anything like that, okay? You know, it just doesn't work that way. But, you know, there's people many times who want to be with other survivors more so than, you know, on a radio show. They want to mingle. Maybe they've been secluded for too long and they're making that baby step to go into a program and yet they don't know where to turn or where to go. So if you open up, and I bring this up because it's important and I get calls all the time in the AM and I direct people to this. You go to programs, click on, and you'll see the world spinning around. And when you see that world spinning around, you know you're in the right place, okay? We don't just do the United States. We cover more than that. We cover other mostly English-speaking countries. I do think we do, I don't know, Spain or something like that now, whatever. But the point is that you scroll down, you find your state. Everything is alphabetical. There's no way that you can have a problem with it. I'm in New Jersey right now, and so I would scroll down to New Jersey, click on, and, you know, you'll have all kinds of towns all the way down, everything alphabetical. And you can find an area that's very close to your town or maybe right in your town. And you can get yourself involved with a program, okay? So I want you to know that. You're never alone. You can call us here, right here at NASCA. I am the night owl. Sometimes I sound very tired because I am. I get a lot of calls, and I like to talk. We all know this. So I have a lot of conversations. I never feel alone, okay? So after that, I take my shower and go to bed when you guys are getting up. Okay, that's what I do. So anyway, tonight, let's go back to our guest, all right? And I'm glad he's here. I do want to, you know, listen to his story. And I'll just say a little bit. It's a John Anderson from River Ridge, Louisiana, a child abuse survivor, NASCA volunteer, and co-founder of SCSA, and that's Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse. And he just says that my abuse started at the early age of 9. And I'm not going to go any further than that because I want him to tell the actual story. And he's got quite a story here as I'm looking this over quickly. I just got in from physical therapy, not a happy person. But anyway, yeah. I'm aching. I just took something.
I know you
but,
are.
I know. It's not fun at all.
Yeah.
So, but I'm still going to be funny because that's the way I am, I swear to God. Okay, so go ahead, John. Start telling your story from the earliest, you know, remembrance of what happened, and we'll go from there. Now, well, you know what? Before you start, I want to give out this telephone number, 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Now, you call that number, and you don't have to be on the show if you don't want to be on the panel. Sometimes we have a panel, other times we don't. But if you want to, you know, be on the panel, I'll certainly bring you on, okay? And that would be great. Okay, go ahead, John. Start out by telling your story. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me tonight and everyone, you know, it's associated with NASCA. I want to tell y'all that I love every one of y'all very much, first of all, before I begin my story tonight. And I want to thank y'all for what y'all do, too. You know, I'm just going to start from the very beginning. When I was a very small boy, I grew up in another town in called Metairie, Louisiana, which is only about maybe 10 miles from where I am now. And I went to another Catholic school there by the name of St. Christopher, okay? And that area I lived in, that's where my grandmother lived, okay? And I had several uncles and aunts that lived in the area and friends. So I kind of had two, you know, childhood lives is the way I kind of look at it these days, you know? That was the early days. That was before the age of 9. Okay, I actually moved out to River Ridge. Let's see, when I was 7. Okay, I believe it was turning 8. But anyway, I made friends, you know, around the other neighborhoods, and we're a pretty tight knit community here. Everybody knows a lot of people all over the place, you know, and especially if you're in a Catholic environment, Catholic schools, you know, and we have parishes here, you know, instead of counties, you know, like most people have, we call them parishes because, you know, the state of Louisiana is well known for its Catholic, you know, origin. It goes way, way back. So after I had a great, great childhood, you know, memories before I hit the age of 9. My grandfather was alive. Well, we had a fishing camps. You know, life is sweet. You know, it was innocent. We ran around the neighborhood. We rode our bikes. You know, we went to each other's houses and had fun, you know. And that's, you know, the way that I remember that particular part of my life, you know. However, when we moved out to River Ridge, I transferred from St. Christopher to St. Matthew. And I was already there for a year. And going, I guess, my second year there. And, you know, things were about to just, I don't know even how to put it into words, Carol. It was going to devastate my life forever. And I didn't know it, you know. So I went to this school, and I was a good student, you know, good athlete, everything early in my years. People knew me for that. I was outstanding and different things in my life, you know. And you know, I was one of these students where I wanted to thrive. You know, I was always racing my friends in class to see who could finish, you know, their work first, and, you know, just having a good time, you know. And that's the way things, you know, were going. You know, for me, I didn't have any issues in school whatsoever, none, you know. Well, in the spring of 1976, okay, we had just gotten back into school, you know, from the holidays, and I had some issues in English literature writing, okay, at the time. And I wanted to make sure that, hey, you know, I wanted to stay on top of my grades. I wanted to just, you know, just do, you know, whatever it took, you know, to be a good student. And that was the thing, you know. I had goals in mind. I wanted to go to certain schools. I wanted to go to certain colleges. Even then, you know, I had good ideas about what I wanted to do, you know. Well, needless to say, you know, there was a program after school that was offered for students that wanted to, you know, either, you know, go and stay and do homework, or you could have issues, you know, help with projects or certain subjects. And you know, it was for about an hour and a half after school. Went on every day. You know, for this particular time, it went on for me, about 3 weeks, okay. So what happened was that the first day that I remember going into that room, it was the beginning of the session of what was going to happen, and it was a roll call, okay, of people in the room, and that's all it was that day, you know. And after that, Carol, there wasn't another day. That I don't remember him abusing me. Okay. Until the last day I was there. So it was horrific for me. I'm gonna tell you how it happened. Is that I was sitting at my desk. And I raised my hand because I had a question about a subject, you know, about how to write something. And I just wanted to make sure it was right. That's all. That's all it was, you know. So I walked up and showed it to him. And that's when he called me around to the other side of his desk. And I wasn't sure what was going on at the time, you know. I'm just a kid, you know. I figured it was normal. I didn't know what to think. I was in shock about what was happening in a way. But at that present moment, you know, I'll never forget that everyone in that classroom was staring at me. as I walked around that desk because I didn't know what to do. But there were at least 25 other kids in that class, Carol, okay? At least. Of different grades, I might add, you know, because this was not just a normal class. It was people from, like, I'd say probably fourth through, I'd say sixth, you know, sixth or seventh. There was a variety of ages in there. But most of them were of the younger, you know, fourth, fifth grade, something like that. So, yes, I knew about everybody in there. Everybody knew me. I just didn't know what was going on, you know. Well, he pulled me around. He put me on his lap. And he said, now, what is it? And I showed him the sentence. And as soon as I was reading it, he reached his hand around and he unzipped my pants sitting on his lap. Okay. So I was hidden from other students at the moment, you know. And looking back at it, and I'm going to describe this to you because you need to know why he did this, okay, and how it happened, was that when he called me around to the back of his desks, okay, he had it spaced out just enough to have two student desks, okay, to the left of him, which was the door where people could look in or come in and out, right, you know, so that was the hallway. Well, he was using these two desks to hide, you know, me in particular, you know, for this duration anyway, away from other people, from him, you know, abusing me, okay? And you know, the first day that it happened, I just couldn't believe it. But you have to know what he did, okay? He said he leaned up behind me, and he put his mouth up against my ear. He told me that he hushed at me and said, "It's okay. I love you." That's what he told me. And he said, "Don't." And he's just meaning not for me to say a word, okay? And then he pointed at a paddle and a ruler that he kept on his desk, okay? He kept it on his desk out in the open all the time. And I still remember the names of them because they're embedded into my skull. You know, it's Goldie and Ashley. And I'll never forget it, you know. Mm-hmm. And why they were named that way, I have no idea. I know the ruler was gold, but the paddle had holes in it, drilled in it all the way through. I know you know what I'm talking about, you know.
Oh,
this is
yeah,
one of those paddles where, yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was, you know, all I needed to see, you know, and he made sure that I knew that, you know, it was a threat. If I said anything, that's what it was, you know. I mean, I was scared to death. I mean, I didn't know what to do, what to think, what to say. I just knew that every morning that I was waking up, it was going to be a different challenge for me each day that I was going to be going to the school. You know, at the time, of course, I couldn't tell my parents. I couldn't tell anyone, you know, that this was happening to me. I was just floored, you know, at being a nine-year-old boy. You know, eventually I did the right thing, and I'm going to explain that to you. But, you know, being a nine-year-old boy, you're very confused about what's actually transpiring at the moment with you, you know, with eventually who is now known as Louisiana's most prolific rapist, okay? And I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that later. But back then, okay, that we knew of, okay, he didn't have any allegations against him, okay, and still didn't at the moment, okay. So let me tell you what happens now, is that during this whole time, it kept getting worse and worse, okay, of his abuse on me. He started calling me up to his desk more frequently. Sometimes it was a couple of times in the same day, okay? And then, you know, it was getting to the point where I was scared beyond anything. I couldn't function anymore in my life, and I needed help. I needed help, you know? And I had a friend, and his name was Tim, and another friend named Matt, who these were my two really good friends back then. And I told him, I said, guys, you know, Brignette's, you know, molesting me every day now. And he said, yeah, we know, you know. And I said, I need help, you know, I don't know what to do. Well, Tim, he said, well, I'm going to tell your mom. I said, how are you going to tell my mom? She said, well, I'm going to tell. I said, okay, you know. Well, that afternoon, that was a Friday, and this was after, you know, the 3 weeks, okay? And this was going to be the last day, okay? But hold on, I need to back up a minute before I go there. All right, that day and the Thursday before, okay, Timmy and Matthew sat in those two desks next to his desk, okay? And do you know he continued to molest me in front of them for those 2 days, okay, knowing that they were looking? Now, let me tell you what else happened, is that by then, because the 2 days had went by that I asked for help, word got out. You know, Timmy told somebody, somebody else told somebody, everybody knew, okay, in the whole entire school what was happening to me, Carol. It wasn't no secret now, okay? So then the kids started gathering in the hall, okay? And they were turning the garbage cans upside down and looking, standing on top of them, and looking in the windows and the transoms in the hall to see him molest me at his desk, you know? It became a running joke for a couple of days to see, you know, who could see me, you know, being raped by George Brignette, okay?
Right.
And include my own sister, Carol, okay? My sister was a year and a half younger than me, and she had gotten word of it also. But she wasn't trying to look. She just wanted to see if that was the truth, I guess, that was going on. Because she was only, God, I was 9, so she was, what, 7 and a half, you know? Think about it, you know. Well, by this time, you know, they were whistling at me in the hall, you know, things like that, you know, making jokes and stuff on, you know, and I didn't know what was about to happen in my life, you know. But that Friday that my mom came and picked me up, we gave Timmy a ride home, and when we got in the car, I just turned my head and I started crying. And my mom asked, what's the matter? And then Timmy said, Miss Anderson, I have to tell you something about what's been happening to Jet. And that's what they call me. They call me Jay because I'm the fourth. Okay. So they knew me as Jay back then. So Timmy told my mom, you know, and after that, that was going to be the last day that I was ever there at St. Matthew, okay? But there's a lot that went on, you know, between this moment and the next, you know, few days, which was a Friday. Come that Monday, the police actually arrested George Brignette, okay, arrested him, put handcuffs on him and took him to jail, okay? And all right, I'm 9, you know, now I'm coming forward telling everything, you know, that's happened to me and what I can remember and this and that, and you know, I don't know that that back then, you know, for me was the best choice at the moment, you know, because of what I suffered through, you know. I thought about that so many times earlier in my life, you know. Now I look at it as the best thing that I ever did in my life, you know, which is a lot to say between that, of course. You know that more than anybody, Carol, is that, you know, there's a lot of anger, a lot of things that go on, you know, when you're very young. Well, let me tell you what happens is that I wound up transferring schools, okay, to begin with, all right. And then we did file charges on him, okay, and we took him to court, all right. So in the court of law, okay, we have him on the stand. And I'm on the stand, too, by the way, as a 9-year-old. I had to go in and testify on my own behalf. All I had to do was go in and identify, you know. Well, they let me sit there for like 15 minutes in this courtroom with this monster right across from me, you know,
right,
with other people sitting over there, too, who I have no idea who they are. Well, then all of a sudden, the bishop walks in dressed in a full regalia from head to toe, decked out in a white robe, a green cross on, big old hat, you know, with all
yeah.
these chains coming around him and everything, you know, like he's going to take over the courtroom, you know, in which he did back then, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though I had eyewitnesses, many eyewitnesses, okay, at that,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that he even admitted to the principal of that school that he did it to me, okay,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that there were other allegations, he still got acquitted, okay? He
yeah.
was still acquitted from that, all right? So, yeah, you know, I'm like asking my dad back then, why? What did they say? You know, and he said, I don't know, there was a conflict of some of the chairs or some other things that somebody said or something. And I'm like, I don't understand. I really just don't understand why they wouldn't believe me over him or these other people over him. And the fact also that they did a bench trial instead of a jury, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that now we know that that particular judge was just so happened to be a big-time Catholic fundraiser. You know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We never ever had a shot. But do you know
right.
that they subpoenaed my mother 9 times over this? 9 times they subpoenaed us, okay? Think about
before.
9 times. And she was in her third trimester of her pregnancy with my younger brother, too. You know?
Oh, my God.
Because they were just trying to run us off, Carol. They were just trying to run us off. That's all. They even came to my house. They came to my house. And they asked my parents to drop the charges on. And we did, you know. But he still got acquitted. And the judges... decision was the fact that we were trying to expose his celibacy was the decision on that case. Can you believe that? That we were conspiring to do that as 9-year-olds, okay?
Right,
that's what the decision
right.
was, okay? So needless to say that at that moment through this whole time, you know, going on with all of this, I lost all my friends. Okay, I lost every single one of them back then. I mean, there wasn't
yep.
even a one that was by me. And the community also put my parents in some dark places too. You know, they really did because my parents, you know, they did a lot, you know, in the community for taking care of people's dogs and animals, you know, grooming and boarding and all. And we were, you know, well-known still all. There.
Mm-hmm.
However,
mm-hmm.
when you think about it, in 1976, you know, you don't take on the archdiocese back then, you know.
Yeah.
That's a no-no in a high Catholic area, you know. And it's really a shame that's the way it was then, and that you know, no matter what we did, we never had a chance, you know. And it's so sad.
I believe that. Hold on a second, John. I want to say something about
uh-huh.
that because people are listening. I'm Catholic also, and my children, of course, are Catholic. And back then, people looked at the priests and even the nuns. I mean, they were saintly. You know what I'm saying? Saintly. So,
right.
You know, they would get, you know, they would get away with things. Like my daughter, and I'm not defending her on this, but, you know, remember the little girls, they had to wear dresses, remember, the green dresses.
Mm-hmm.
And so my daughter was always very athletic. And they were out on the play yard. And my daughter, for some reason, I don't know why, but she decided she was going to climb up like a monkey where they were throwing the basketball net. And she was able to do that because she was so athletic. Well,
mm-hmm.
I admit you could see underneath her dress, but Mother Superior came out and yanked her down. She was able to get her down. And she pulled her panties down in front of all those kids out on the play yard and
mm-hmm.
spanked her cheeks in front of everybody.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And no one told me, not even my daughter. You see how kids keep their mouths shut?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because my kids, they know me. If I had gone down there, I probably would have pulled the nun's panties down and spanked and kicked her in the ass, in plain English, because you don't do that. Because, you see, in those days, though, people looked at the priests as like they were God, and the nuns, they were right under them, but still saintly, we'll put it that way. So I'm not surprised.
Right.
You know, I'm
yeah.
not surprised mm-hmm. that you had to go through this. And that was in the 70s also with my daughter. You
yeah.
guys must be the same age. She's 51
mm-hmm.
or 52.
I'm 55, yeah.
You know, well, my son is, he's going to be 55, so in
mm-hmm.
December. So
mm-hmm.
anyway, see, I'm just a young thing. I keep telling people this. I told them,
yeah.
So, you know, you're old, but I'm not. Yeah, okay. But, you know, I'm not, honey, but I'm going to tell you. But well, anyway, the point is this. Back in those days, they didn't get into trouble, and they could do anything. The paddle that you speak of course, I know what it looked like. And, you know, they just got away with everything. They absolutely did.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just not right. It's not right. And I feel
no,
so sorry,
right.
you know, for kids who had to go through that. They had been in a public school first, but there was
right.
a lot of violence over in that school. So they ended up going
right.
to St. James. And I loved
yeah.
St. James for their prayer group. But
uh-huh.
when it
yeah.
came to the school, you're right. I mean, the
yep.
priests and the nuns could do any, they couldn't do any wrong. Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's true, you know, and that's exactly how it was. And
mm-hmm.
the thing about that too, Carol, is that I wanted to be that role model, you know, of a person in my life where I was a leader, I was, you know, educated, I wanted a good life for myself, you know, and I had all the opportunities in front of me. I really did, you know. So
mm-hmm.
let me tell you what happened after I left St. Matthew, okay. I went to another school by the name of John Curtis, who I want to give a big shout out to, home of the Patriots. These guys, I love everybody over there.
mm-hmm.
but,
it's okay.
Probably one of the biggest mistakes ever made, you know, was leaving that
hey,
school.
Hey, at least you can cry, John. I envy that.
Oh, yeah.
I can't
okay.
cry.
I'm okay. But I just love him so much. I really do. But
uh-huh.
the thing about it is that you have to realize is that I wanted my life back, that was taken from me. In other words, all my friends that left that St. Matthew, and they went to another high school by the name of Rummel, Archbishop Rummel, okay, is what it's called. I wanted to go there. You know, I wanted to redeem myself. I wanted to get back into it and continue on and just try to forget about it and go. But it never happened for me. And I'm going to tell you why. It's because, yes, I made the move, okay? I actually left the school, John Curtis, and I went to Rummel, and it was the worst thing I ever did in my life. Because after that, I was now disassociated from not only the school I just left, but the school I was going to, okay, where I thought I would fit back in. Nope. I was shut down and shut out, you know. And that was not only that school. After that, I went to another school, and I was shut out. And then I went to another school, and I was shut out. You know why? Because everybody knows everybody around here, and they know what happened to John Anderson when he was a kid, you know. So everywhere I went, I was getting a cold shoulder, you know. I wound up in a public school, you know. And you know how it is. It's violent, drugs. I didn't want to be in school, you know, now. I just didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be around all that crap, so I skipped out. I didn't go, you know. So I wound up dropping out for a little while. And then I found this little small school, and I had one chance in my life to kind of redeem myself. And it was a little private school. And if it wasn't for that school, I still probably wouldn't have a degree, you know, right now, due to the fact that when you go, including St. Matthew, by the time I graduated high school, I went to six different schools, Carol, six. And, you know, I never got kicked out of none of them, you know. I mean, I didn't need that in my life, you know.
Well, you see, you're not the bad guy here, you know.
I know that,
that's what people have to realize is, for God's sake, you are a little kid, and I've heard of you know, teachers, not priests or nuns, but teachers who abuse their children in class, and they do that. They separate them.
Yeah.
I read a case of that not too long ago with a female teacher. Had pushed a little boy that she was after over to the other side of the room, separate from his classmates, and she too had like a barricade. So is this something they all do when they do it that way? That's crazy, but that's I know exactly what you're talking about.
It is, you know.
Mm-hmm. And kids, you know, when they find out, they don't back you, okay?
No,
We might have had one friends, maybe. I know,
why I wanted to really commend those two boys. So that was Timmy Hickey, you know, and Matthew Quirk. Matthew's no longer with us, by the way. But those two boys, I look back at that, you know, with them taking a stand for me. God damn, can you imagine, you know, being brought into a court of law? In front of the archdiocese, testifying for your friend, that's big time, you know. And I love him for
that's
that.
Big time.
And if he can hear me today, I have never talked to him since, you know. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. Is that I lost
you weren't allowed to. His parents probably said, you know, keep him away.
Yeah.
Almost do the same thing in New
family,
York. Go ahead.
With Timmy's family, I think that they were definitely willing to help and did. And then with the Quirk family, they also did too. They were with me all the way. But you know, you got to realize, you know, Carol, is that when you have brothers and sisters, and both those families did, and they, you know, have the tradition of going through the Catholic system and graduating and going on, you know, it's privilege. It's, you know, it's what it is, and you know, that's how our lives were supposed to be, you know. But unfortunately, there was a lot of us that got handed, you know, a bad deal, you know. But, you know, with that being said, I'm going to tell you, over at that school at St. Matthew, it turned out to be a hotbed, okay, of sexual abuse. I know for a fact that there are at least a dozen, okay. And now most of those are by Deacon George Brignac, okay, but there were two others there too also, and another one is Father LeBourgeois, who I know that definitely, no doubt, did to at least two girls, okay? And that, I know for a fact, is credible. So, you know, it was a hotbed, you know, for it. It's just the way it was. And none of those people ever reached out to me at all. You know, I have done so much for them since then, I don't even think they realize what I do now. But, you know, going back, you know, to my days and finishing up high school, boy, that was a tough time for me. You know, I wasn't sure if I was going to graduate. I didn't know where my life was going at all. I wasn't even at home anymore, basically, you know, because of my parents' house. It's like, what, less than a half a mile from the school? I didn't want to be anywhere around. I mean, I still live close to it now, within at least a couple miles from it, but at least I don't go down there too often, or I go around the other way and try not to see it, you know. I try to avoid it, but it's there, you know. But, you know, I've learned a lot to try to let, you know, that little boy go that was abused, you know, in a lot of ways. At the same time, I still want people to know that it's real, and that and don't underestimate, you know, anyone when it comes to that, because it is true, and that I don't ever want to see another child harmed and have a life that I had, you know, going through all of that. It's horrific,
horrifying.
You know?
It's horrifying. You know, that's a terrible thing. You know, school is supposed to be a safe place. You like to think of it that way anyway, with adults anyway, with their teachers. And so often it's not, because I've mentioned this now, maybe this will be the fourth time in many years. Huffington Post ran this article about women who were women pedophiles, okay? And, you know, and it showed pictures of them. It showed their pictures and everything, okay? And it
right.
said where they were from. And so Huffington Post, you know, I really appreciate what they had done, because it brings forth awareness about how teachers, whether it be nuns or priests or regular teachers in public schools, you know, they're pedophiles, because pedophiles go where children go. And they
right.
even, you know, get their jobs, you know, so that they can be near the children. So,
right.
but we don't talk enough about the female pedophiles. So they ran something, I don't know, for a few weeks on the females. And I had lists and tons of females. Now, there are more men, yes. But they're finding out as time goes by that there are a lot of females as well, okay?
Yeah.
And they can
yeah.
be pretty or not pretty, or somewhere in between, and the age
right.
difference, or, you know, the ages, it doesn't matter. If you're a pedophile, you're a pedophile, okay?
That's right.
So
yep.
these saintly people that we looked up to, and I, you know, for years I looked up to the priests and everything in the church that I belonged to, St. James, down in Red Bank, New Jersey, and I loved those priests there. Now, I believe in my heart that was a good church, and I believe
right.
in my heart that was
right.
a good school, and the priests were good. Because
right.
if they weren't, something would have come out somewhere along the line, somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And it never has.
And you know, Carol, too, you know of anybody that you're going to feel it in your heart, because you were a victim yourself, just like me, and we know. We can feel it, and we could tell just by being around the environment. Something will come out. You know, and that's, you know, that's exactly true. And that's what I want people to be aware of, is that if there's any allegations at all, Carol, something's got to be done immediately. You know, we can't overlook it anymore, you know, at all, because lives are at stake, you know, and it is. It's a public emergency. That's exactly the way it has to be looked at, you know.
Well,
so,
you're right.
Yeah.
And you see, and unfortunately, though, people don't look at it as a public emergency, because they're always still stuck in the bad pattern of it's not going to happen to my kid. And I'm
right.
sorry if it happens to so-and-so's kid, but my kid is safe, and I don't want to commit,
right.
you know, I don't want to start any waves and things like that. Because
yeah.
of retaliation, a lot of times people think of, you know, and it doesn't have to be total urban area. It can be anywhere. People have that mindset, you know.
Exactly.
They don't want to start
trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that usually, just like what you're saying, guess what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Their son winds up getting abused, and he doesn't come out now until he's like 52 years old. You know,
wow.
That's the pattern.
Yeah.
That's the
mm-hmm.
way it has been. The average age
mm-hmm.
is 52. You know, that's the average. I think that's going to come down, but still, you know, think about it. You're so right about that. Is that when people don't think that it could happen to their own kid, and they feel at their side, well, guess what? It did, but you just don't know
yep.
about it yet, you know?
Yep.
And that's the
right.
thing is that, you know, it's just, that's why, you know, that I love NASCA so much is that, you know, I really, you know, want everyone out there listening right now to really, really think about, you know, your lives. You know, if you have been abused, it doesn't matter when or where, you know, please come out, you know, please come forward and tell your story and talk to someone because this is your time. This is your only time. You know, I'm doing it. I've done it. I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to continue to help people do it. And we need you, you know. I need to do this for myself. I need to do it for Carol. I need to do it for NASCA. I need to do it for all the kids in this world and the unborn children. Because
that's
if
right.
we don't get it done now, nobody is going to. And it's bad. It's bad, you know. And people can't turn
around
and look away from
it. Well, it's going to take the survivors. It's going to take the survivors, you know, to
yes.
bring forth change.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that. And I don't care what other people say. Okay, I believe that if we tell our story, you know, as many times as we possibly can, okay, it does
mm-hmm.
help. It desensitizes. Look, our story is our story, but it makes us
yep.
stronger. You know, the
right.
more we tell our story, it makes us stronger. And, sweetheart, someday when you get to be my age, okay, it's a look, I can look backwards and I see everything. I didn't forget
yeah.
anything. And I didn't dissociate
mm-hmm.
or any of that stuff. I remember it. I saw it. I lived it. And that's just the way it is because that's the way my makeup is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of person I am. So,
right.
but I do know that every time that I told my story over the years now, every place that I've been asked to speak, you know, one time at Centenary, I had over 200 people, for God's sake, just for me to, you know, tell my story. And boy, did I sell
mm-hmm.
a lot of books that night. That was great.
Yeah, boy.
But, the point is that the more times that I told my story, the better I felt about me, and I knew that I was stronger and getting stronger and getting stronger and becoming much more effective in,
mm-hmm.
in helping other people.
Oh, yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
that's very important for people to understand.
Yeah.
You know, and
it,
now
it is,
listen.
Too. And,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, when you first start out, okay, because I had someone ask me this the other day, who's considering coming on the show, but they've never told this story before. Okay.
Uh-huh.
When you first start out, a lot of times you can be all jerky and nervous and all this other stuff, you know. And as far as triggering is concerned, yes, you might even get a little bit triggered. But we have to work through, this is what I was trying to say last night, we have to work through those triggers. And a way
mm-hmm.
to work through those triggers is to look at them.
Right.
And it is good if you have a therapist, you know, to help you with this.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't, you do it
oh, yeah.
yourself, and whatever. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
to look at them. And the more you look at them, the less threatening they become.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you realize
mm-hmm.
that as you're standing there being triggered,
mm-hmm.
you realize that you're okay. You don't have a .45 pointed at your head, okay.
Mm-hmm.
No one's standing there with a knife who's going to stab you or anything. You see how my mind works, right? You're okay. You're okay. It's just that you're having these
mm-hmm.
feelings, and then
yeah.
you learn how to, you know, to get over, not totally get over them, but you get learn how to handle those feelings as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there is, yeah. That's why we say there is healing after abuse. There absolutely is. And there is life after abuse. Okay?
Yeah.
So it's very important that the people. Yeah. So every time that you go out and help people, John, you're helping people and you're showing them that you made it. You have a powerful story. And, you know, that other people can make it too. It gives them the courage. And that's why it's so important, you know, to get men, even more men, you know, to come out and to...
Yeah.
We have a lot of people. Oh, my phone never stops. I already did that, you goofy guy. What would he want? All right, let me turn this off. Okay. It's more important to me at this point. All right, yes, December is the awareness month that I was made aware of anyway, you know, for to, I don't like to use the word celebrate. No, that's stupid. But to bring forth awareness that, you know, I think it is anyway, to bring forth awareness that, you know, men have feelings too. Little boys get abused just like women do, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when they're younger. And they have the same feelings. And there's nothing wrong with having those feelings. I wish that I could cry. I can cry for my children. If something's bad, like my son was so sick for a while, you know that. And I'm not going to say who, but some stupid in the family took a picture of me crying because my son was standing with that thing on his neck, and it was a heavy one. And he was having trouble breathing at night, and I was very frightened. And I started to cry, and someone took my picture.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the point is this. I can cry for my children. I can cry for my animals, okay, if I have to put them down.
Right.
I'll bawl my brains out. But when it comes to all the things that I went through as a child, I have not once cried. And that's not commendable.
Wow.
That's just telling you that I don't know where those feelings are.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is I know what I went through. I know how I felt when I went through all that abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know where the emotional feelings are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like I've hardened myself very, very much so or something. And that's, we'll get into that because it looks like possibly on Friday, unless we get a guest, I have to tell my story and we'll see. But we'll see. But anyway, the point is we all have our stories. And do you have a doggy in the house?
What's that?
Do you have a doggy in the house?
Yo, you hear him in the back?
Yeah, he's a Rin Tin dog, isn't he?
No, yes, I yawn poo. He wants to be by me 24/7.
he's cute. Yeah,
I shut him out the room. Yeah, I'll let him in. That way he won't howl.
He won't do anything. Let him in. He wants to be by Daddy.
Yeah.
Let him in.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. It's
okay.
Yeah. All right, Drew. Mm-hmm. Come on. Yeah, that's Drew Brees is his name. He's a Yorkie poo. He's one of my service
very
dogs.
Cute.
Isn't it too?
Very cute. Very cute. I think I saw you in a truck or something with a German Shepherd. Okay,
that's a nice-looking dog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's actually not a German. He's actually what they call a King Shepherd. He's Dutch. Yeah.
Well, beautiful dog.
Yeah, they're bigger than Germans. Yeah, he looked like a big dog. Yeah, that's my other service dog. I have two.
I love animals. I love animals.
Yeah.
So getting back to your story.
Also,
okay.
Yeah,
oh, go ahead, honey. Go ahead.
But anyway, I also have cockapoos, too. So, I'm a dog, very dog-oriented person for sure. But, let me get back to my story. I kind of left off, in my high school days. And then I was a really good athlete, you know. So I got a scholarship to a college at Nickel State and baseball, you know. And I was really good baseball player. You know, I had a lot going for me. And I had some opportunities abroad. I mean, I played all over. I played in Europe, played in Canada, all over the Southeast United States. I wound up moving up to Northeast Tennessee. I was going to, maybe pursue a career in playing baseball, but I wound up, getting married up there, and it didn't work out for me, however. But the reason why I really left, Louisiana to go to Tennessee was because of the abuse, And the thing about it was that I couldn't be here anymore, I had to move and find just a place where nobody knew me, basically, is what it was, So I wound up living there for 15 years, I lost 15 years of my life around my parents, my little brother, who, I got to see him until he was about five. And then after that, was when I moved, over this, I mean, I would have never moved if this would have never happened to me, And it was just one of the probably most, difficult things that I ever went through ever is living when you live by yourself way, like I'm talking 800 miles away from anybody that you're related to on your own as a, I was 20. Yeah. 20 years old. And I wound up living there till I was, probably 35, I guess, and I wound up getting married and I had, two sons. So I basically raised a family there, and stayed there for a long time, I always wanted to, get back home somehow, some way. And I figured that, the more time went by, the less I would be known for what I was known for, here, more than what I really wanted to be known for, instead of being.
Stop right there, John, stop. You see, that's the atrocity. That's the ugliness of the whole thing, okay? You're still feeling ashamed because of all the things that happened to you in your own hometown and all this other stuff from years ago. And you see, the shame is in the wrong place. Okay, that's number one. And don't forget, these people who were pointing fingers at you and all this other stuff, I went through that in the city. I'll talk about it on Friday night if I go on, okay? We'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But when I walked into the school, see, I can identify with a little bit of what you're saying here. When I walked into the school, I only took like 2 days off, had a terrible time at home. I'll get into that, not today, though. And there was a group of girls standing around. Now, don't mind you, this is New York, okay, and it's Staten Island, so we're talking about a rough area here.
Mm-hmm.
As I was entering the school, they all started to point at me and laugh. They laughed.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of thinking, well, here's a kid, some of them were older, like you're talking about, you had different ages in that school. I did too, okay? So it was the older ones, and they were laughing at me. And instead of feeling sorry, gee, there's a kid, it could have been my little younger sister, okay, or whatever.
Right.
Or it could have been me, that this man had done this to, kidnapped and raped.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they grow up, hopefully.
Yeah.
And the ones that don't, shame on them, and they're toxic people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they came from the same background in the sense maybe in their own family they're being abused, and that can screw a kid's brain up and make them act, like juvenile delinquents and so forth and so on. So,
right.
But most of those people in your area, okay, now you're 55 now. Some are already passed. I'm not trying to scare you, but people, the heart attacks. A 55-year-old around me died the other day, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's too damn young to die, sorry. But, the point is they should have a better mentality at this point.
Right.
A better mentality. Yeah. And you should walk with your head held high. You see, that's what people have to realize.
I do.
You're a survivor. Yeah. You're a survivor who went through hell, okay? We all go through hell. But there isn't one person that's going to put me down today because I'm so tough. I'm just so tough. And I like being tough. I have that rough exterior. And that's that's what keeps me going. Plus, I believe in God. So between the two, that keeps me going, too. It says here, I suffer extensive damage physically and mentally. You have the complex PTSD. Of course, I know what complex means, and that's because you have repetitive, you know, situations happening, and that would have been in school. You know, losing your friend, that was upsetting, too, because when I was in Staten Island, the same thing happened, only her parents said that you can't hang out with me anymore. What am I, a piece of garbage or something, because I got raped, kidnapped and raped? And so I lost my really good friend, you know, and because of that. So, you know, it's upsetting. So that was traumatic. I lost my friend, too, on top of it all. So, you see, there's so many things that we go through. And then you say that you suffer from fibromyalgia. I have that also.
Yep.
And I want to say something about fibromyalgia. People who giggle about that. I found that information some time ago. You may or may not know this. But I did mention on a show that there were two doctors online. One had it, one didn't. And the one that had it, and they weren't trying to sell products or anything. It wasn't that type of thing. They were simply talking about fibromyalgia.
Right.
And the doctor that had it had been abused.
Real.
So they were trying to get a message out there. Again, not selling products at all.
Right, right, right.
So I watched it. So you have fibromyalgia.
Well, I believe.
And that it says here permanent nerve damage. Well,
yeah.
You know, after a while, you have it for such a long time. And teenagers can have fibromyalgia. They found this out.
Right.
Depression and anxiety. Okay.
Yeah.
So are you getting therapy today yet, or what's going on with that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I am. Yes, I religiously, you know, stick with my therapy, and I take my medication that my doctor prescribes me regularly. I don't not do it. I learned a long time ago to not do it, okay? I mean, you know, I was prescribed that for a reason, and when I did get off of it, I became really, really emotional, depressed, you know, just a lot of I thought I could handle it on my own. Could not do it, you know? I definitely was testing the grounds, Carol, was basically what I did with the medicine, because I wasn't sure, you know, what is really going on with this? Well, you know, how do I, you know, conceive this in my brain that, yeah, something is wrong. Can I get away without taking this medication or that medication? Or, you know, should I, you know, smoke stuff that makes me feel good? Should I take this? You know, I don't know. It's a life thing that only years of I better get in because we're going to have a dog fight. Sorry about that.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, the neighbor walks the dog, and then they all go off. But that's a ritual.
Go ahead,
here.
Go do what you have to do.
But no, it's okay. I'm in now. But yeah, you know, I make sure that I regulate myself, you know, continuously with my medications and seeing my doctors, you know, and I've realized why. It took me a long time to get over that being, you know, that tough guy, that hard head, you know, I can do this by myself kind of person. You know, that's not the case. Nobody can do this on their own. If I can't do it on my own, nobody can do it on their own. That's the way I look at it. And people know me well enough to know why now, you know. You know, I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but I got a lot to say. We got about, 25 minutes left? So time's flying. So basically, I want you to know that, you know, when I hit 2013 was when I first really got truly diagnosed with it. Okay. What happened was that I started getting serious physical issues. I didn't know what was happening to my body. It was breaking down. I was getting spinal disorders of all kinds, permanent nerve damage and all this and that. I'm like, man, what is going on, you know? So my doctors are telling me that because, you know, my condition is so bad that I technically can't have any more back surgeries, and they want to recommend putting in a spinal stimulator into me, okay, which is a medical procedure. They install a battery with probes into your spinal cord, okay, and as a remote control. So, yes, I have it in me even today. But let me tell you what happens, though, is that in order for you to have this procedure done, you have to go have a psychological test.
Right,
and it's just
right.
a common thing that they do for this procedure. Everybody that has one, you know, which ain't many in this world, they have to take these tests. Well, I had a major, major breakdown on that when I took that test, because there were questions in there about sexual abuse and, you know, about do you have any feelings against people and this and that, and have you ever thought about harming yourself and all of this stuff. And, I mean, I lost it. I really did. I had to get hospitalized over that. You know, so with that being said, in my life, I would say that I've been hospitalized to a pretty, you know, substantial degree. I'd say probably about five different times, okay, five different times through – From 2000 and say four to the present, I was hospitalized about five different times. Yeah, you know, over this, over PTSD. So it's nothing to play with. It's very serious. You know, the physical detrimentals that come along with it are just devastating to the human body because of your central nervous system. You basically have a form of brain damage. There are therapies for it, however, and for me, you know, I know that I'm never going to be perfect in my life, but what makes me thrive anyway, Carol, is for these people that I take care of every day. You know, that's what makes me go, just like you. You know, I need that in my life, and when I do something for other people, I know that. I feel good inside my heart about what I've done, whether it be protection, whether it be information, education, it does not matter, or support, okay, any of it. I know that I fulfilled my day in the way that my therapy, okay. I'll just give you an example. Today, I tracked a pedophile down from 150 miles away from each other, and I found him. Today,
wow.
You know, and I do this. You know why I do it? Because I want to know where his ass is. You know, excuse my language. But I don't want that SOB out in the public anywhere around kids, you know. And that's the way I'm going to continue to do stuff. And that's my thing now, is that I want justice. That's why with me and Richard starting, you know, SDSA, which I'm the co-founder of, I'm on the committee, head of support men's division, and we worldwide, we're just like NASCAR. You know, we do a lot of things together, you know, the same things. However, with SCSA, I trigger that more on what I would say onto a justice scene and support bigger than anything, you know, only because of who's involved and what it's about, you know, and especially when it comes down to my home state. No, you're not going to mess with my people here. You can forget that. I mean, look, I will help anybody across this globe, okay? But you're not going to mess with my people down here in Louisiana. You can forget it. And I will be there till the day I die for them, no question, you know? But I'll do that for anybody, Carol, you know? That's what people have to understand. And that's why I put so much effort into this now, is that, you know, between NASCA and SCSA, for me, it's been the best thing that's ever happened to me later in my life. You know, knowing you and Bill and Penelope, who I love to death. I mean, me and her work so good together. I mean, we just have that bond of you know, just like you and you know, and yours, you know. It's just the way it is, and I love y'all for that, for putting me and giving me that opportunity. You know, and that's what I want to tell people out here that are listening today, is that, let me tell you something. If you want an opportunity, people, and you out there listening to me, let me tell you something. NASCA, it's there. It is there. I mean, all the platforms are there. You just have to reach out to the right people. And I have to say, you know, the same for SDSA. You know, in each side, it's very, very important to know that there are help in both sides, okay? So, yeah. So that's what my life is.
Well, you see, that's what keeps us going, though. Okay, this is John. You have to understand. Like my kids will say to me, "Ma, you don't get paid for anything you do." No, I don't. But I get paid spiritually and mentally and emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
There's all different ways of being paid. All right, and it's important to me. And okay,
yeah.
I've been alone for a while now because my husband passed away and all that. And we had our good times, we had our bad times. But we also had, most of them were good. But anyway, I'm thankful for that.
Sorry about that. Trying to get away from the dogs, sorry. I'm surrounded by them.
I can hear that. But
yeah.
On the other hand, what I'm trying to say is, you know, I don't even know if I would never want to get married again, ever. I don't want to live with a guy. I want some guy for 3 times a week, okay? And we can go out to dinner, or we can cook here. I don't care, whatever. I like to cook. And, you know, whatever. And we're not joined at the hip. Because what guy is going to put up with me? You know, staying up all night, a lot of times I'm up just about, I watch the dawn's early light, okay, I do.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
The other day I was on, I don't know who I was texting you, and we ran into each other on the cell phone, and you said, "Oh, you got up early today." I said, "No, I'm going to go take my shower and go to bed," all right? 'Cause now, how many guys are going to put up with that? You know what I'm saying? They don't like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't understand. So a lot of people don't understand, not just guys. A lot of people don't understand that. But it's something that I'm committed to, not because I have to, but because, you know, it's what I want to do and try to help as many people as I can. And if I can't help them, I send them to a program or somewhere else, whatever, you know, to someone else. By the way, we have the contact list. We should mention that. On the page and on the NASCA website page. And, you know, if there's any time you need to speak, yes, I'm the night owl. I'm up at top. You'll see that. And you don't have to be fearful about calling me because I'm up anyway. I'm watching Julie channels and stuff like that. I shouldn't be, but I'm watching it. And you're not bothering me. You know, just give me a call, you know, and we talk.
Sure.
And I can probably help you. And if I can't help you, then I'll send you to someone that I think who can help you, and you're never alone. That's the way it is. And that's important for people to understand that because, oh, God, I have this fantastic amount of information on the aloneness feeling that we'll get into some other night, but that feeling of being alone. And until we get connected with our mission, if you want to put it that way, and we know what we're doing, And you know, we have a purpose in life, you know, to try and help other people. And we not worry about what other people think about what we're doing because this is our life, okay? You know, then, you know, we work it as we see that it needs to be done. Because, again, it's going to take the survivors because the people out there, I told Bill this the other day, and it was yesterday, I hand out all kinds of paperwork from NASCA. But it's very simply worded, all right? Nothing, you know, nothing heavy duty because society's not ready for that. What I need to do is to get them started. The 10, it said like the 10, you know, things for child abuse, the 10 symptoms of child abuse. We have two, actually. We have one paper that says 17 and then one says 10. But I'm allowed to post that in stores, John, and then people see it on the bulletin board. They can comprehend 10 things. They can take their you know, camera on their phone and take a picture of that. And it has the NASCA logo up top, all right?
Right.
And so that's all over in a lot of stores, and I do that in daycare centers too. So you see, there's ways that, you know, well, I was doing all kinds of presentations. But now today I just found out we're in the hot spot area and all of sixth grade has been shut down in the schools.
Huh. Yeah, I saw that.
I don't know why just sixth grade. To me, it's kind of stupid. I don't understand this. I'm not a scientist, and I don't even think they know what's going on. So, you know, so we're having problems now, you know, with things like that. you know, even where to do what we were doing before, a lot of us. So, but I find other ways. Your laundromats are a good place to post information. But you have to get permission first.
Okay, oh, yeah.
You have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I had information in the post office right next to the thugs on the wall. The FBI, they were looking for the FBI. You know, it's FBI people that the FBI is looking for. And there was NASCAR right next to him. It lasted for about 4 or 5 months. Yeah, I was pretty proud of that. And I thought it was kind of funny, too, because they were writing it. But you know what? It's not funny, though, John, because you see these people are every bit as bad as the people at the FBI are looking for, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
No question. Yeah.
So, what else do you want to talk about here? Let's see.
Yeah.
Okay, you. Well, you're a musician also. My son's a musician. The song that you hear every night. My son actually made that song, and he's the lead guitarist in that. And the guy that plays bass played with the Rolling Stones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's awesome. I thought that. And he lives in Hackettstown, New Jersey. This guy, and I can't think of his name. You have to look it up. It's on our website. But that's where it was made in a studio over there, and he offered to play bass and with the singer we've known for years. So you know, we do what we do. Okay, I wrote a book. My son made the song for the show, And then someone famous right there who plays with the Rolling Stones. He's definitely there when someone's out, and he'll, you know, take their place. And then sometimes he just plays with them. But, you know, the point is we do our poetry. You know, there's just artists out there. When I was really heavy doing the presentations, I was allowed to do it actually in the church. I brought videos. I also had artwork because some of our people – you know, we are people of worth. We do have talent, okay?
Right. Oh, yeah.
So we have our artists, too. And I would ask this one friend of mine who's a part of NASCAR to please draw pictures and of a little girl stranded outside, you know, and she did a beautiful job on that. She made a picture of a little boy that was being held in a pen in back of the house way in the woods. My God, I mean, the way she did it was fantastic. Oh, my God, the talent. So, you see, because we have been abused, yes, our antennas are always up. They're always up, John. And we see things maybe that other people don't recognize, and that's why it's important to get the information out, even the paperwork that I do, but simple, because we have to start simple. Otherwise, if it's too much... And too hard, too harsh, too heavy, they'll just walk away, all right? So, you know, that's what you can do, too. And, of course, presentations, if we ever get this plague, as I call it, out of here completely, we can go back to doing that, you know, people who do presentations. So, you know, so there's all kinds of things that we can do. And, of course, we have the show. And, you know, and we have this platform. And the other two nights a week, we have other people that come on. And, you know, that's the way it is. So we're certainly doing what we can do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And
you're doing, you're out there looking for pedophiles. And now what do? You call the cops? Is that what you do? And you say, hey, so-and-so is here? And okay.
Absolutely.
You don't try to handle
these
people yourself. Yeah.
No, I don't have any jurisdiction with that at all, but I can inform them, though, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, with that, too, is that, you know, you have to realize is that I want to make sure that the people that are behind this get closure, too, you know, and this is part of that. You know, it's about their healing, too, along with mine, and to know that justice needs to be served, you know, and this is what it's all about. You know, without that, you know, it's just too much risk. Too much risk, and it's been going on for way too long, and I've had enough. I mean, that's it. You know, we've all had enough, and in order for me to make it happen, I've got to get out there. I run the streets and make sure that things are supposed to be where they are. And especially if it's closer to my area, I can personally look into it, you know. Now, I have done a lot of things by way of communications, like phone and things of that nature, and emails through other states, just to almost every state. There ain't too many that I haven't been involved with, you know, but the majority are Texas, Florida, Louisiana, Pennsylvania, in New York, I think, probably would, if I was to put those like in a top five as far as like the bulk of people, you know, that those states right there have a tremendous amount of sexual abuse involved with them, you know, and it's a shame. California too, don't leave that out. You know, it's coast to coast, you know, and it's worldwide actually, you know. And which brings up something I want to talk about too. I know we only have about 10 minutes left, is that, you know, this time of year, you know, it's a very, very difficult time for survivors because of the holidays. You know, spending time around family that you might not want to be around, or things that could have happened in the past. You know, I know that that is very difficult. And we've talked about this a lot, is that, you know, whatever you feel in your heart is the right thing to do, then just do it. You know, and don't feel intimidated by other people. Because I believe that, you know, coming so far over a long time, you know, in your road to healing, is that why would you want to trigger yourself and put yourself in a harsh environment that you just might, you know, have some you know, difficulties with, you know. So with that being said, I know that we're going to have a show tomorrow night, right? We're going to be on tomorrow night.
Well, there is going to be a show. I will be with my son because,
right.
You know.
But there's going to be a show. So what I'm getting
at is that
there is going to be people out here, you know, doing shows, you know, again tomorrow night. And if you feel like that you want to join NASCA tomorrow night, we'll be here, you know. So I just want y'all to know that you know, you all loved. And that if you ever need, you know, anyone from NASCA, all you have to do is reach out. And if we, you know, can help with anything at all, we would be glad to. And that's the whole point about, you know, going through the holidays is to try, you know, the best that you possibly can to feel loved for yourself, okay? And maintain, you know, that feeling, you know, because, hey, you know, it's your life. You know, and nobody can tell you what to do in your own life. However, you know, as years go by, you realize that, you know, why fight against, you know, something or something that, you know, somebody doesn't agree with you about, you know. Don't put yourself there, you know. And find people that are willing to listen to you or willing to tell you, hey, you know, I love you today, you know. Dude, what's wrong with that? You know, and I tell you, sometimes I find some of the best therapy and the happiest days are, you know, sharing different stories with other survivors, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And the therapy that I get out of that is, to me, well beyond what I would get through any doctor that I've ever seen, you know, is because We all know, you know, each other to a certain degree, and we all, you know, basically can relate, you know, to what went on as a true survivor. You know, we have that sense, you know, and when you're around one another and discussing things, you know, your day could really, really turn around and become joyous, you know. Even if you were in a bad mood and you weren't looking forward to anything or something didn't happen, wow, you know, next thing you know, you know, you wind up spending an hour or so with someone and you know, discussing issues, and wow, you know, it just turned out to be just a beautiful night, you know, and that just continues and continues to happen, you know, and this is the thing, is that no one or anyone out there that you are not alone, okay, and that we will be here, and I will be here. And I know that this is a tough time through the holidays, but however, it can be great times also, you know. So please, you know, if this is your time, and you feel like, you know, that you're wanting to reach out, then just pick the phone up. That's all you have to do. You know, people know my phone number, and I can give it out publicly. It's area code 504-940-4800. People call me all the time, and I talk about all kinds of things, you know, whether it be, you know, business, or whether it be support or healing or whatever it may be, whatever, you know. And just like you, Carol, you know, I meet so many good friends by doing that. And I know you do too. And yeah, they wouldn't be calling you if you didn't have that sense of personality that people can trust you, you know, to talk to. And that's a big thing with us. You know, trust is a major, major issue in this industry, you know. And I know that reaching out to people that you never met before, or, you know, or vaguely have met, it's tough to come out and you know, open up. And but you don't have to at first. But, you know, all it takes is one time, you know, and you would be so surprised about if you are hiding anything inside of you like that needs to come out, especially any type of childhood sex abuse. Please come out. You know, come forward. Come talk to us. We're here for you. And we want to make sure that you know, you understand that you're not alone in this world, and that there are many, many people here that are willing to do whatever it takes to help you, you know, in your journey of healing, okay?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's good. That's good. And that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, I'm not the only person on that contact list. And people can call that contact list. And if you can't find mm-hmm. someone, you call someone else, because not everybody's home or whatever. But
right.
I'm always home in the AM. Most people are, aren't they? So,
yep.
if you know,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times people have a hard time sleeping, John, you know. Now, I worked
yeah.
mm-hmm. so many jobs, different jobs, and I wasn't really teasing last night. It was all county and state jobs, so I am fingerprinted all over New Jersey, all right? But
mm-hmm.
the point is, many times I had to work the graveyard shift, as they used to call it. So I'm used to being up. Like somebody else, I had people say to me,
right.
for God's sake, how can you do that? How can
mm-hmm.
you stand it?
Yeah.
But, you get used to it. I don't know if your body
yeah, you
ever
do.
Truly gets used to it,
yeah.
but your brain
yeah.
gets used to it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, especially, and I know you have too, is that there's a lot of people that reach out to us from other countries, you know?
Oh, yeah. I've had that.
Canada, the UK, you know, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And listen,
mm-hmm.
I mean, look, if there's a, you know, what I would call a level 5, which is, you know, pretty much to emergency status, and that's what we have at SPSA, is that, yes, I'm going to get up, I'm going to listen, I need to find out what's going on, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I have made several phone calls, what I would call a welfare call to other
mm-hmm.
cities, you know, just to make sure that these people were fine because of that,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I will go to any extreme it takes to make sure that if a person is reaching out to me, I'm going to follow up with it. You know, I'm just not going to be somebody to dish you off or to send you somewhere else. Hey, if I don't have the answers, just like you, Carol, you know, then we can find somebody, you know.
Right.
That's the thing. You know, that's why we have such a huge platform in Nashville. You know, Bill has done, and you yourself has done an outstanding job of you know, creating this you know, atmosphere of people, for people to go to, that is unlimited. You know, look at all the tags. You know, the tags are unlimited if you want to really get into it, anywhere from, you know, child abuse all the way to domestic violence, neglect, you name it, intervention,
prevention. Oh, my God, there's so much always to talk about.
Come
yeah.
on, you know. And that's what this is, you know. And if it wasn't for NASCA and SCSA, I have to say that I don't know what my life would be like right now, you know. So I do have to commend you and Bill and Penelope and Tammy and everyone there at NASCA, along with Richard Wimman and everyone else that's associated with myself, to have me where I am here today. And I think that I know there's less than a minute left, but I can honestly say that I have learned from the best, okay, and in a positive way against the negative situation, okay? And that's how I look at my life.
Well,
and you're
that's
part
good.
Of that.
Well, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I'm happy mm-hmm. to be a part of your life, too. I got to end the show.
Yes, it's here.
You know, no one called in, but that's
you.
Okay. It's everybody's cooking and stuff right now. But anyway, listen to me. You had quite a story. You did a fine job, and I knew you would. And, you know, so now I know your story, and I didn't know it before, so now I'm happy. So, but anyway, I will talk to you. I'm going to try to call in again. I'm with my son. He's doing a lot better, but not there yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, tomorrow I'm going to be with him. But anyway,
yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, John, for coming on.
Thank you, Sarah.
And, you're welcome. And, have a good day tomorrow. And
yes,
I'll talk
too.
To you soon.
Okay. Everybody have a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good night and God bless.
Okay. All right, good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone away.